This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And this week, I'm joined again by comedian Leanne Lord. Welcome back, Leanne. And also joining me is special guest Phil Plait, the bad astronomer.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
I've got you on the show because I happen to know that you're an expert. I count myself as an expert in this as well, but you're like a real expert in criticizing science in movies. And today's show is about science in movies. When do they get it right? When do they get it wrong? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, when they get it right is rarely, and when they get it wrong is all the time. So this is going to be pretty pretty lengthy show. So
I suggest everybody.
It's a double feature.
Sit back and relax, folks.
So I look at the top five science fiction movies gross of all time worldwide, and number one is obvious. It's Avatar. Avatar. Oh, what's Leanne? What?
Go on, please.
Are you jealous that because they were hot women that were blue and you're not blue? Is that the problem?
Oh, that is totally not my issue.
Do you go blue in your comedy?
No, not really. Not really. My mom comes to my show. She keeps me honest.
I wonder if the blue man group, you know, that I wonder if that'd be cool.
They have a lawsuit, actually. That's the problem.
So, of course, there was Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace. So that's Episode 4 for those who are not Star Wars geeks. It's Episode 1 that came after Episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Well, I heard they were going to make 3 more Star Wars movies after the original 3, but as far as I know, those were never made, Neil.
Wow. I love
you. Ooh. Well, let's do these one at a time. Let's go back to Avatar. I thought Avatar was fine. I didn't have issues with it. I was a little concerned about the unobtainium. Like, what the hell is that? But otherwise, Phil, what did you think?
Well, unobtainium is a standard science fiction joke. That's been around, I don't even know how long.
Well, apparently it was a serious mineral on this planet.
Well, I think they named it that tongue-in-cheek because it's been used by science fiction authors since the 50s. I mean, I remember reading that as a kid.
Okay.
And in The Core, they do the same thing.
In the movie The Core. We'll get to The Core later.
But they use that as a shield to protect them from the Earth's heat.
Okay.
So it's sort of a standard kind of an inside
standard,
joke.
Standard, it's like a placeholder name for whatever.
Something hard to get, you know, to unobtainium.
But you otherwise have issues with it. 9-foot blue people on a planet moon.
I actually I haven't seen the movie.
Wow! Oh,
I know. I think that's all that needs to be said, quite frankly.
Well, forget you then. Oh, Leanne, how'd you do with Avatar?
I would have liked to have seen a script. That would have been nice. Some real writing, you know, all the writers in the world who are unemployed.
Didn't
it would have been nice.
Spend 15 years making this movie?
They did. They spent
it. At no point did nobody say, you know, maybe this needs a script?
That's what bothers me most. All these wonderful, well, quote unquote, wonderful science fiction effects, these special effects, and not one writer. The writers go, like, go to the meetings, dude. Everybody's unemployed.
They're all unemployed.
Everybody would have signed on.
I tweeted about it, and I remember saying this movie, the recipe for it is like three parts The Matrix, two parts Pocahontas, and because there's a lot of sort of evil Westerners taking over the native culture that's all connected to nature.
It was very subtle.
And Fern Gully. That's what everybody was telling me. And I saw Fern Gully with my daughter when she was very young. And everybody said it's exactly that movie.
And there they were with USB ponytails, because they take their ponytail, plug it into the plants, and then they became one with the plants. Electrochemically one.
Normally people connect with plants and then become one with something else.
Oh, by smoking the plants.
That's how I've heard about this.
Wow.
At least, yes.
And now that's a different show as well.
So how about Jurassic Park? That one is everybody's favorite, you know. How do you feel about that?
I have to distinguish between a movie I really enjoyed and the scientific accuracy of a movie. And I can do that.
Okay, why didn't Jurassic Park do both?
Well, because the science in it was silly. Uh-oh.
Yes.
You know what?
No, please. I'm kidding.
No giant dinosaurs. Sorry. Incredibly enjoyable movie, fantastic special effects, great soundtrack. I like John Williams. But being able to extract DNA from a mosquito's stomach just doesn't work. It's sort of like...
Well, it doesn't work yet.
It won't work at all. I mean, basically what your stomach is designed to do is take substances from other things,
and
plants,
digest them. No, but it's just... No, I thought they covered their ass on that. Oops. Am I laughing?
Okay.
They covered their buttocks on that
their
one
velociraptor.
Because they showed the mosquito freshly sucking the blood of whatever dinosaur it was, and at moments after that, a bead of sap covered over the mosquito, so it got trapped with undigested blood in its belly.
Is that what happened?
Yes.
Oh, I just thought he had stomach issues, and that's what they're
able to do. Now, you know what? I'm not a biologist. Mm-hmm. Do red blood corpuscles have DNA? They don't have a nucleus, do they?
Mm. And this is but where we need a call-in.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're out there on Twitter...
Tweet us.
So here's... Now, I have colleagues at the museum who study amber, right? Because the mosquito was trapped in amber. And they said the best amber for this sort of thing is in New Jersey.
Really?
But in the movie, they showed them going to some exotic island
and
plucking it out of a cave or wherever. So it just would have looked a little less interesting if they went to Hackensack, you know, to get the...
I see. Well, amber is oranges, right? So
yes.
How could
you know
they
what?
Tell
amber
that they
is,
could go to New Jersey?
Amber is amber.
So they missed an opportunity to tie this in with the Jersey Shore?
There
is
you
that
go.
What
Snooki is sort of the same color, I
yes,
think.
Yes, and we would like to see her encased in amber. That would be lovely.
So how about Transformers? What do you think of that?
Okay, perfect example. I really enjoyed this movie. People were going crazy. Now, I'm a little bit too old to have really gotten into the TV show, because I think it was in the 80s, and by then I was already moving on to different shows.
Which was back when it was just a vehicle to sell a product.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I figured, hey, giant robots beating the crap out of each other. And you know what? That's what I got.
Kicking butt, taking
awesome
names.
Flick. And it was a funny movie. I really enjoyed it. The science of it was pretty silly, because you've got this object which evidently has a huge amount of mass, and they shrink it down until it can fit in your hand. And somehow all of the mass went away. You know, they were picking up and walking around. It was like some sort of...
So you have mass issues.
Yeah, exactly. That was a pain in the mass, if that's what you want.
Pain in the mass, very nice.
This thing's down the size of a Rubik's Cube, and it should weigh as much as a mountain, and they're just running around with it. Now, maybe it has special inertialist powers.
Anti-gravity.
Yeah.
Because when you shrink things...
They
never say that. But what I liked about it was how they constructed the cover-up for it. I thought that was great. That's why they built the Hoover Dam. Because
that's
when they came, and that's where we got all of the high-tech discoveries from reverse engineering these transformers from another planet. I thought that was a cool sort of backstory to make that happen.
Yeah, and I thought it was fine. Now, the second movie was not as good.
Okay, so we'll continue.
And that it was terrible.
You know, there was a NASA panel that got together to decide, I guess for the guidance of others, what the five best science-based movies of all time are.
And Transformers was on that list.
No, it was so not on that list. But one of them, one of my favorite movies, a lower budget one, was Gattaca. Remember that?
Very good flick.
Yeah, very good flick. And you know, the title of that movie is spelled by the letters of the amino acids that are the protein of life, the proteins of life.
Right.
Yeah.
I gotta write that down.
Yeah. What else could they spell? Is he tact?
Yeah. So can you recite that? There's guanine at
guano? No, that's later. It's cytosine.
Cytosine.
Thiamine, or is that that's thymine?
And you guys are professionals, because I don't know this. I have an excuse.
So for those who hadn't seen Gattaca, it's a story where you can get your DNA selected for you so that your offspring can get the best possible version of the you and your mate that is possible. I mean, that is possible, that you can possibly construct out of it. So they're not engineering DNA. They're simply new DNA. They're simply assembling all the features that you want to have in your children from what already exists in your genetic profile. And so it's basically a genetically engineered society, but not outside of the bounds of what you could have produced otherwise.
Right. And the story becomes, when everybody is genetically engineered to be superior, there are people who are not. And how do they survive?
Who are not engineers. How do they? Yeah, because they're not as smart. They're not as quick. Right. They're not as. They smell worse.
I mean,
you know.
Clearly, this is not going to be covered in everybody's health plan. This is going to be. That's a hell of a deductible.
So it's now what was not a follow on to that, but was basically the same movie, but with a much higher budget, was The Island, which I thought was a high art. The way they filmed it, the concepts, the emotion, the drama.
That was Scarlett Johansson, wasn't it?
Well, I think she was in it. Yes, yeah, is that all you remembered from the movie?
No, well, the thing is, I never saw it, and she was in it, and so that might tell you, you know, something about this movie.
No, actually, I thought it was well done. In this case, you can genetically engineer your twin, but the twin does not come into being at birth. They can be born as adults, and then they live out their lives, and they are all you harvested for whatever organs you might need later in life, and they don't even know it. They're kept. On an island.
Wow.
Well, on an intellectual island. They don't know where they are. They think they're on an island, and they just live out their lives, and there's a fake disaster outside of this island where they're not, if they went out they would die. So they all believe that they're safe. But then they're told that they created a safe haven for them, but not everyone can go. So when their lottery number comes up, then they can go. But that means it's ready. The
Arvins
they get harvested.
This sounds like part Logan's Run, part Lost.
And part Clonus, the Clonus horror. I don't know if you ever saw this. A terrible 70s movie.
What are the odds?
I hard to believe, isn't it? But, you know, I always wonder about this. You know, why grow a whole person? That seems like an awful lot of trouble.
That's a good point.
A finger.
Just
chop my finger off making, you know, salad, and I'm going to have to kill this person.
But if you're right-handed, you want that finger back.
Well, yeah, but I would just grow a finger.
Yeah, you just grow the finger. Yeah. Right, yeah. That's all the histrionics of the whole person is so out there. Now, another movie, I think it's the best film of the 90s, maybe second only to The Matrix in my sort of sci-fi opinion, is Contact. The Carl Sagan story, Contact. That got it. Oh,
I'm sorry.
I think we found
Sagan.
A fan.
Oh, he's your boy.
You are so cool. I am totally.
You like those turtlenecks.
Yeah.
You like those turtlenecks. So it's his story, it thinks through what it would be like to make contact, first contact with intelligent life that's out there, and I think what they put a lot of effort into was capturing how the public would react to such a discovery. And how crazy people start out crazy. Now you add this element on it, we make contact with an intelligent species, and then the crazy becomes crazy squared.
Right.
So how did you react to it?
I thought it was great, but I read the novel. The novel is even better than the movie. The ending of that novel still gives me chills when I think about it. And part of the beauty of that movie is how they detect the civilization, how the civilization communicates with us, how that all works, is really quite possibly how it would happen. It's based on Sagan's work.
I agree with that. We're wrapping up our first segment here. We're going to go through the good, the bad, and the ugly.
You're listening to Star Talk Radio. Back in a moment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx. who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
Star Talk, we're back. Today's special guest is Phil Plait, who is a commentator extraordinaire on science fiction films. And we're joined again by Leanne Lord.
We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're still in sort of the good segment of movies. Contact is up there among the best movies, I think, that capture the science. And it also captured, I think, the social, cultural reactions to the discovery of life in the universe. Did you otherwise have any issues or problems with the science as captured there?
There was one or two small mistakes.
Like what?
I think it was when Jodie Foster is talking to Matthew McConaughey in the movie, and she's trying to describe how many stars there are and how many civilizations there are.
Go on.
And she says if there are 100 million galaxies out there, and if one in a million has...
No, I got it.
I don't have the quote.
No, I'll tell you why I got it.
Okay.
Because I was at the world premiere in Pasadena, and Jodie Foster's two rows ahead of me, and I've got the guy whose equation they're verbally capturing. This is
Frank Drake
is two rows behind me. This is the equation that estimates how much life there might be in the universe. And Jodie Foster, getting inch by inch closer to Matthew McConaughey with the sky in the background, Arecibo Observatory. It's a romantic moment in anticipation of their first kiss, basically. And she says, if they're
he can hardly hold it back here.
Of the 100 billion stars in the galaxy, if only one in a million of them had planets, and only one of the million of those with planets had life, and only one of the million of those with life had intelligent life, that still leaves millions of planets to find.
I think that's right. That sounds right.
If you do the math, that leaves 0.0001 planets. The division was wrong there.
You're ruining a romantic moment with math.
Well, then, so I got all upset about this because this is simple arithmetic. And Jodie Foster went to Yale, last I checked. And don't they have arithmetic at Yale?
So she should have turned to a director and went, cut, I can't do this. This isn't right. I'm in my trailer.
So I mentioned this to her at the after party. I said, Jodie, you got this wrong. She said, oh, I worked so hard to memorize that line. And so it meant it was just a line rather than an actual mathematical statement.
Right.
And so then I thought maybe they could just put other words inside, you know, like Forrest Gump style, you just sort of change the words with the image. But no, they just left it in because the very next scene was them, the two of them waking up in bed. So this is what got her laid at that moment.
It was bad math.
Bad math.
You know, it never did that for me, and I'm pretty bad at math. Now, I'm thinking if you talk about every galaxy in the universe, there are about 100 billion galaxies.
100 billion, sure.
With 100 billion stars in them each, that's 10 to the 22. And she had three factors of a million, that's 10 to the 18. That would leave thousands.
Thousands if she did that for all the stars in the universe.
In the universe.
But she started with the galaxy, and
that's
why that's
and it's still wrong because it would be thousands,
you know,
not millions.
You guys are right. That is sexier. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You
is
like
it warm
that?
In here?
Yeah.
Is it warm in here?
Oh, if only this were television and not radio. You should see her right now. She's fanning herself.
Leanne is feeling it. Another one. How about one of my favorite of the good movies is Deep Impact.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Got all the good science. And what I liked about that is they understood that if you're going to get hit by an asteroid, you'll probably get hit in the ocean.
Right.
Because Earth is a 70% ocean surface. And, of course, all the producers want to destroy the cities. You know, but you can still do that. You do it with a tsunami, as they did with New York and other sort of major coastal properties. But what was your reaction to it?
I thought Deep Impact was a terrific movie. I think the screenplay was written by a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much of the movie is quite accurate. My favorite scene, I was watching this in the theater, my favorite scene is when they go to the comet. And in other movies, they might land on it. But in this one, because a comet, even though it's 10 miles across, it's, you know, roughly the size of a large mountain or bigger, the gravity of a comet is very weak. So you can't really land on it. So instead, they pull up next to it.
You couldn't. It'd be hard to
stay there.
Yeah, yeah, you know? A breeze would blow you into orbit.
Yeah, if a little bit of the comet evaporated, it would puff you away. So instead, they park near it and then shoot basically
harpoons.
Harpoons or pitons. And then,
oh, there's a word for it. What is
and
it?
Then they
wait, what's the word?
Isn't it pitons when you like are climbing a mountain or something like that?
Oh, so I'm a city person, so
okay,
I have
that's
no
right,
idea
yeah.
that that's
and I,
the
and
right
I live
word.
In Boulder, and I actually don't know, so I'll probably get thrown out of the town now. And then they basically winch themselves down to the comet. And I was like cheering in the theater, and I'm surprised I wasn't escorted out of there.
So they got their gravity right, is
what
you're saying.
That was fantastic, yeah.
That was good.
And I actually use the tsunami scene when I give public talks about asteroid impacts because it is so well done and so accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people that they might even be underestimating the damage from an impact like this.
And you got to admit that portrayed, I think, the best president there ever was in a movie.
In fact,
Morgan Freeman as president was so convincing and so authoritative, and he was played that role just the way you would want a president to be. What, Leanne?
No, I'm just asking, is anybody bothered that natural disasters of this magnitude always seem to happen on a black president's watch? Anybody? Anybody? Am I being
always?
Yeah, I was on.
Danny Glover, he was president. Something went down.
That's true.
Anybody?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'm going to too many rallies.
In 2012, was the president black in 2012? No, I don't remember.
Do we see a president?
I blacked most of that movie out.
Wow.
It's a 3-hour movie. I remember like 4 seconds of it because I think that's
we'll
how
get
long
to
the
it,
plot
that,
actually lasted.
We'll get to 2012 because that's
okay.
in the bad section.
Oh my
yes.
word.
Okay.
Is really? Kidding.
But I do want to add with Deep Impact. Deep Impact made one mistake that was kind of a big one, and that is when they blow up the big piece of comet. It's about 5 miles across, and they blow it up. It actually disintegrates, and still all the pieces hit the Earth's atmosphere and burn up. And the problem is that's still going to kill everybody because the energy of an impact of an object depends on its mass and its velocity. It's the kinetic energy. And when they blow this thing up, the mass hasn't changed. It's just in small pieces. And the velocity hasn't changed either. So the total energy that's released by this impact is exactly the same. It's just spread out over more area. So in the end of Deep Impact, really everybody should have died anyway.
bumming us out.
Yeah, sorry.
So, no residuals for anybody on this movie.
That's true. So, you know. But one thing I do love about that movie
is... It is possible that if the pieces are small enough, they'll burn up in the upper atmosphere and their heat radiates back into space. Whereas if the whole thing gets through... then all the energy goes to Earth's surface.
Maybe. But we're talking about an object that is 5 miles across.
Yeah.
So I'm still thinking that even if like 5% of it dumps its heat into the Earth's atmosphere,
it's still a bad day.
Truly screwed.
You basically get flash cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would bad.
Yeah. No SPF for that, eh?
SPF a billion, yeah.
So what else do I got here? I got my list here. Is there any particular? What's your favorite science fiction movie of all time that got the science right?
Is it in this list?
Yeah.
Deep Impact is way up on the list. Mm-hmm. Contact is way up on the list. 2001 has really accurate science. It has its errors.
I know a couple of errors in science.
So nitpicky.
Let's go back and forth.
Okay.
The last man standing wins. Okay, go.
Pick one.
Go. 2001 A Space Odyssey. 1968, was it?
68, 69.
Yeah, okay.
Stanley Kubrick. When they're on the moon and they go to Tycho Base and they show the Earth over the horizon, it's too close to the horizon.
Too close to the horizon.
Yeah, it would be much higher up.
Earth never sets from the near side of the moon.
Right.
So they got but did it fit nicely in the frame?
Oh, well, sure. That's a canonic scene.
Okay, so
right?
Then it's not a mistake. They took some creative liberties to make the scene look cool. I don't count that as a mistake.
If by that you make mistake, then yes, we agree.
That's a creative mistake rather than that they don't know what they're doing mistake.
I'm glad you agree with me. One for me. Go ahead.
Okay, good. If you calculate the rotation rate of the space station.
Yes.
It is 3 times too fast for the gravity to make 1G on board the space station. On board the rotating.
I've done that calculation. I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's way too fast. It's way too fast, but it looks nice.
Yes.
So I'll give him that, because if it went slower, it's too slow and it's too... The movie's already kind of slow in those scenes.
It would match the pace of the movie. Yeah.
I watched that movie when it came out, and I think I'm still watching it. That's how slow that movie is. Okay.
All right. So, your turn.
You want nitpicky?
Yes, go.
When Haywood Floyd is on the Pan Am shuttle, Pan Am, which is now out of business by 2001, actually, and he's on his way to the space station, I think it was, they give him some food.
Yes.
And he slurps it up through a straw.
Mm-hmm.
The level of the drink or whatever goes back down when he releases with his mouth. And that happens because of gravity. I believe it happens because of gravity on the Earth. I can actually explain that, though, if the food is in sort of an airtight container, then air pressure is all you need to suck it back down the straw. And I've gone back and forth.
Wait, what you're saying is that he's in zero G.
He's
on
in
that
zero
trip.
G. That's
so
right.
Therefore, the liquid should just stay up in the straw.
I think so, but I'm not sure. If he's drawing it up through a container, then the pressure gets lower. It would go back down, but it's arguable either way.
The rebuttal that I heard was that he just simply blew it back down.
Really? Okay.
That's the rebuttal.
But I think air pressure would do it. I think that's one of those marginal.
Impact to inside the vehicle itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your turn. Science Smackdown. I am loving this.
I'm trying to remember the movie right now.
Okay, I got one. You ready?
Yeah.
The monolith is supposed to have zero albedo if you read the novel, okay?
That's right.
Yet, all images of the monolith, you can see the edge between one side and the other.
Right.
Which implies that it reflects differently on one side than the other. Whereas it has zero albedo, all light that hits it is absorbed. And you would not be able to see an edge with a slightly different reflectivity than you do in the film.
Albedo being the reflectivity. Zero is perfectly black. White
perfectly
is perfectly
black.
Perfectly white. You might be able to explain this as a phase effect. If the light hits it at a different angle, then it might reflect off, because albedo does depend on the angle
of the
light.
This is an alien zero albedo. They'll get every light that hits it.
Okay.
It's an alien thing.
All right, I'll give you that one.
You give me that. Okay. Your turn.
I'm trying to it's been so long since I've seen the movie. Haywood Floyd is played by a different actor in 2010, the sequel. He's younger.
You have an issue with that?
Roy Scheider. No, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm desperate.
Okay. I'll give you time. We'll come
actually,
back to
you know what? There's a scene in the moon bus when they go from the moon base to see the monolith, and it's unclear whether they're actually in a ballistic trajectory or just suspending themselves. Rockets or jets to suspend themselves.
When we come back on Star Talk, we'll talk about the bad ones in the good, the bad, and the ugly of science fiction films. Be there. We're
back.
Just to finish out the good before we get to the bad of science in science fiction films, I got to give a shout out to the animated feature Chicken Little, When the Sky Was Falling. I got to give a shout out.
Didn't see that coming at all.
That
Wait, Chicken Run or Chicken Little?
Chicken, not Chicken okay. Run, which I enjoyed. That yeah. was the.
It's not in the notes, people.
With the Wallace and Gromit. Chicken Little, words, the sky is falling. All right. So how does the sky fall? In the movie, they're aliens who come to visit. And they replace the sky with these tiles that are hexagonal, because they'd have to be to tile a surface. No other shape. Well, square can do it, I guess, and triangles. But how many shapes can tile a surface?
It's like a hemispherical surface? Yeah, not very.
Well, if it's a big enough hemisphere,
if,
you can.
If they're all the same shape, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they have hexagonal shapes, and the way they work is it's a piece of hardware that carries forth the image of what's behind it. So if you drop one of these on the floor, you say, "Oh, that's a hexagon." A few seconds later, it reads the entire carpet pattern, makes that the upper surface, and so therefore it looks like it disappears.
Right.
So you don't even know you're walking on these tiles. So what had happened was Chicken Little saw one of these hexagons accidentally fall out of the sky. So the aliens were doing something. I don't know what it was. But I just thought that they had to put in some kind of topology, some geometry, and just a little shout out to
and
Chicken
Little.
And a
clever idea. That's actually pretty good.
It is.
Yeah,
and
like
he's
that.
Got one of these, and he plays with it. He puts it in front of his bed, and it disappears, and it becomes... It looks like his bed on his floor and his cabinet. So, anyhow, just a shout out.
I can find a lot of uses for something like
Let's
that.
Go to
I'm
the
sure
bad.
The military could, too.
I've got Phil Plait here, the bad astronomer, Leanne Lord, comedian. 2012, the movie. Phil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what?
I didn't mind the science. It was a neutrino transition out of the sun, which was a new decay of the neutrino that gets absorbed inside the Earth, heating the Earth from the inside out. I didn't have a problem with that.
Really?
Wow.
Really? Okay. And our time is up, folks. Thanks for listening.
My big problem is the premise that a limo could somehow save you under these conditions.
Well, the 75th time that John Cusack and Amanda Peet narrowly escape a crack opening up underneath them as they're running away. She's, But, this idea of neutrinos are a subatomic particle. They are, they move in such a way that they don't interact with normal matter very well. So the thing that most people say is they can pass through a light year of lead without interacting with it. And honestly, that's not so far off. And so these things pass through the Earth. There are millions of neutrinos passing through you right now. They pass right through you. You don't even know it.
Is that what that is?
And
felt that? Yeah, that's right.
And the point is the neutrinos don't know it either because they're not interacting with you.
Exactly. Okay. And so for them to actually interact with the Earth is kind of ridiculous.
They invented a new transition of the neutrino state that does interact with the Earth. Once you buy into that premise, yes, the Earth would be heated from the inside out. I don't have an issue with that.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
Okay, how about the core?
Neil's wrong.
How about the core?
That I think we can agree with. An enjoyable movie, liked the acting, liked it. I thought it was really funny and enjoyed it. Just terrible. The science in it was just terrible. The idea was that the Earth's core stops rotating. And somehow this is collapsing the Earth's magnetic field, and it lets dangerous things from the sun. Evidently not super neutrinos in this case, but other things happen. And
because the magnetic field would normally protect us from these dangerous forces from the sun.
And there are problems with this in that the core can't just stop rotating. And even if it could, I don't think it would really matter. But then what they show the Earth's magnetic field not working anymore, what was starting to hit the Earth were microwaves. They specifically say microwaves. And there's the scene with the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and these beams are coming down and boiling the water and doing stuff like that. And it's like, well, microwaves aren't affected by magnetic fields. Microwaves are just another form of light. They're not particles. And so they're not deflected by the Earth's magnetic field at all. We could have one or not. Microwaves from the sun are still coming. And even if they are, it's not like your microwave oven. The sun barely puts out microwaves at all in that case. They can't cook anything. So that whole thing was just wrong from top to bottom.
So one of the worst, and in fact, on a NASA panel, they judged that as one of the worst science movies of all time.
I'm not surprised. And as an astronomer, I could watch it and enjoy it. All of my friends who are geophysicists.
Yeah, I got some of them too. Yeah. They couldn't stand it.
Yeah, wow. they felt the same way
therapy,
about that movie.
They needed therapy.
They so needed therapy at the end of that movie.
It's wrong.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there were some honestly some good scenes, but
now they know what we feel like because more of the sci-fi movies are cosmic rather than geological,
right?
And because and they're up there saying, "Oh, you just overreacted." No, we were not.
No. See,
wait,
you see,
what's that?
What? I mean, that brings up for me an interesting point. Does anyone, when they're writing this stuff, ever say, "Hey, I should call somebody and, you know, do a little fact checking, a little background"? You know?
Apparently not.
Okay.
Well, the guy who wrote The Core. Now, I may be misremembering this, but I believe he had a master's degree in geophysics.
And that explains a lot about our education system.
Well, I don't know if I would say that. The problem here is Hollywood, right? You hand in a script, yeah, and then 50 other people rewrite it.
That's
and,
true.
And
see, siding with the scientists, assuming that the scientists got it right and that Hollywood messed it up.
That's very possible.
Betrays your profession.
I got to stick by my peeps.
Your peeps. How about Armageddon? That's everyone's favorite movie to hate.
By the end of that movie, I was rooting for the asteroid. I have never seen a movie with more mistakes in it in my life.
Give me your top three mistakes.
I simply the credits. I mean,
wow.
Misspelled
names.
This movie has more mistakes than frames. From the opening scene where they talk about the dinosaur killer impact with Charlton Heston narrating, and they say the explosion was the force of 10,000 atomic bombs. And it's like, no, try 10 billion atomic bombs.
It was way more than that. Yeah.
Unbelievable in a movie where they're trying to, they exaggerate everything in the movie. The one thing that's actually scientific, they screw it up and underestimate it.
And they underestimate it. So that's how bad it was. They didn't even get the thing that they should have gotten right. Right.
And so you've got this asteroid the size of Texas, discovered 18 days before impact. They're going to blow it up with a bomb, split it in half, and the two pieces are going to expand far enough, fast enough.
And by the way, an asteroid the size of Texas, we would have found that 200 years ago.
Exactly.
That's a huge asteroid.
Like, big mistake. The biggest asteroid in the solar system, Ceres, is roughly the size of Texas.
Yeah.
And it was discovered in 1801.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, anything like that we'd see. If it took 18 days to get from the asteroid belt to the Earth, it would be moving faster than any spacecraft we've ever launched. I mean, that's hugely fast. It's
and meanwhile,
of millions of miles.
They're sending the space shuttle, which is not equipped to go beyond a couple hundred miles above Earth's orbit. They're sending that out to the deep space.
Oh, but this was the X-35 secret military space shuttle. And then they're going to blow it up with a bomb that's going to split it in half with the two halves separating and missing the Earth. You can calculate the energy of that bomb roughly. You have to make some estimations, but you can do that, and it would actually explode with the same energy that the sun emits. And so we don't have a bomb like that. It's a 100 million gigaton bomb, I think is the number. Something like that.
Gigaton.
And it's like, yeah, that's bad. I mean, in a word, that would be bad.
Bad bomb.
And so, you know, at that point when Ben Affleck was crying, at that point I was like, yeah, I'm with you, Ben.
So it's Bruce Willis saving the world, you know? Crackerjack oil drillers.
I want to like Bruce Willis in this movie. Liv Tyler is in this movie, and I didn't like it.
That made it work for me, I think. You know, that was working.
And you know what? It is a funny movie. I have to admit, there are enjoyable moments to it and everything like that. But honestly, it's, you know, a friend of mine likened it to having a steel pail put over your head and somebody hitting you with a wrench for 2 hours. That's really it.
That's pretty specific.
Now,
but I thought if actually it was written in a rather witty way, there was a lot of good one-liners. It was kind of fun and jocular. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I'm twisting your arm
really,
on that one.
I mean, when Steve Buscemi gets space madness, and, you know, why is there a machine gun on a shuttle? What do they need this for?
All right. So you vetted. I got a vet on another vent. You vetted your venting. I'm going to do this.
Okay.
I actually have a run-in with Jim Cameron regarding Titanic.
I know the story.
You know the story. May I tell the story?
It's a good story.
I was one of the last people to watch the Titanic in the movie theater, and I'm watching it, and there's Kate Winslet. Okay, the ship sinks. She's on the plank, looking up, singing deliriously, looking up into the sky. We know the day, the time, the year, the location, the longitude and latitude of where the Titanic sank. There is only one sky she should have been looking at as she looked straight up, and it was the wrong sky. It was not only the wrong sky, the left half of the night sky that she looked at was the mirror reflection of the right half. It was not only the wrong sky, it was a lazy sky.
Cameron cheaped out.
Man, and I don't mind you being loosey-goosey, except that the entire marketing premise of that film was on the accuracy of the details of the ship Titanic, because he had a submersible and went down there and knew what the sconces, wall sconces looked like, and the china patterns and the staterooms. If you're going to boast about that, something I can't double check, and you're going to on the sky, which you can double check with a cheap planetarium program you put on your computer, I was pissed off.
You told him.
When we come back, I'm going to tell you what happened when I told this, when I got up in the face of Jim Cameron, when we come back to Star Talk Radio.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want him to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And StarTalk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
This is Star Talk Radio. Welcome back. So, where did we leave off? Well, first of all, you can follow us. Friend us on Facebook. I guess it's now Like Us, I think is what it's called. You got to like us. Well, just find us. We're Star Talk Radio, and we tweet at Star Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. I tweet at Neil Tyson, and we've got Bad Astronomer tweeting and Leanne Lord just bringing our piece of the universe.
And I just tweeted, so excuse me.
Right.
Wow, okay.
So,
is that what that was? Okay. Thought that it was neutrinos passing through. Okay.
So where did we leave off? I think I was retelling my encounter with Jim Cameron regarding Titanic.
Yeah. Sounds like a throwdown.
It was so a smackdown with Jim Cameron. So had he not made any premise of accuracy in his film, I would not have cared. I would have just said, fine, he made up a sky. I'm not going to lose sleep over this. So it was a matter of inconsistency in delivered product. So I met him in California. We happened to be attending the same conference, and I came up to him, and I was polite, and I said, Mr. Cameron, you know, Titanic's great, and I understand, right, fine, but I want to call something to your attention. The sky that was above the sinking ship was the wrong sky, and I was wondering what you... And I wanted him to grovel at my feet, right, is what I wanted to have happen in my immaturity. And he said, oh, actually, that was done in post-production. And so that must have slipped by. That was so honest and simple, but still I was left unfulfilled. I wanted him to beg forgiveness, but I had no rejoinder at that point. 3 years later, I would see him again. He would be visiting New York, getting an award from Wired magazine. And their party was in the Hayden Planetarium Hall of the Universe. And they invited me just as a courtesy. It was a rental, but they invited me as a courtesy. I'm having dinner with the guy. The wine is getting poured. There's only 8 of us around the table. And I said, I got to bring this up again. Because he did not react the way I wanted him to react.
Glutton so for punishment.
I said, Jim, because now he's Jim, right? So I said, Jim, how is it that you could have made that mistake, given how much attention to detail was there before? And he said, last I checked, Titanic worldwide has grossed $1 billion. Imagine how much more it would have grossed had I gotten the sky correct.
Kaboom.
I'm guessing that wasn't the reaction you wanted.
Man, and my tail went between my legs. He just called my stuff out right on the spot. And so I was sort of quiet the rest of the meal, but I didn't bring up the subject again. 3 weeks later, I get a phone call from some guy who says, hello, is this Dr. Tyson? I said, yes. He said, I forgot his name, Johnny Jones. I work post-production for Jim Cameron, and he's going to release a 10th anniversary director's cut, and he'll be adding new scenes, and he tells me, you have a sky he can use. It was, yes! Yes! It was like, he shoots, he scores.
It is good to be the king.
You see, and the lesson I get out of that is I need to get my own planetarium, clearly.
For real.
Man.
Don't forget the wine.
One of the few triumphs we can call attention to here. So let's get to the ugly. Let's talk about ugly creatures, ugly aliens. How about Alien the movie? Tell me about that.
Awesome flick. Now, my wife disagrees. She thinks it's really boring. But, you know, it's a different movie. It made in 1979.
Well, tell me about the science. Did you like the alien in that?
I thought the alien was so cool.
It was crazy. It wasn't just an actor in a lizard suit.
It was based on H.R. Giger drawings, and his stuff is so
I knew
creepy.
That.
Yeah. And so, oh, I see. The geek-off starts again.
No, go on.
But, you know, it acid for blood, I can believe that. That would be an extraordinary defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether it could evolve naturally or not, I don't know. But
how can something be growing inside of you and you not know it?
Well, it was little.
Oh.
No, I don't know.
Are you serious? Only a man could make that statement. Seriously? You know, sometimes you have a good 6 weeks before you actually know.
Well, something could be growing inside of you and I wouldn't know it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
So we're not even counting germs, fellas? Viruses, diseases, nothing?
You're full of germs. Isn't most of your body weight?
They're finding that some stupidly high fraction of your total body mass is microbes.
Yeah.
Not even you. It's other creatures.
And there are things that are almost visible to the naked eye living on your eyelashes. And I mean your eyelashes.
Just mine.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Although I'm still a little stuck at that you married a woman who doesn't like aliens.
She just thought it was slow. She prefers faster movies. Wait, I can understand that. She's younger than I am.
I got to get back to creatures growing inside you. So, Leanne, how many days before you know you're pregnant?
Oh.
What? So you should ask me how many... What?
You said you would know. There's time where something could grow inside of you and you wouldn't know. How much time?
I do not know.
Because you haven't been pregnant yet.
No.
So you know more informed about this than either Phil or I.
But we're still talking about growing things inside of a woman, and you don't know instantly. You're not your own pregnancy test. Oh, my gosh.
That would be interesting.
Like,
I got pregnant that second. Yeah, that would be interesting.
It's like, whoops. Oh.
Well, in the movie's defense, there is some evidence that the aliens were genetically engineered. And in the Predator versus Alien movies and in the series of books, the Predators developed the aliens as the ultimate hunting game.
Let's talk about Predator. How about Predator? What do you think of that?
I enjoyed Predator as well.
Mm-hmm.
The infrared vision and coming to Earth to hunt people.
But it was still very humanoid. It had two arms, two legs, a torso, a head, and a neck.
Well, I've talked to Seth Shostak.
And
the dreadlocks, yeah. Seth Shostak, who was an astronomer with the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and I talked about this, and he actually feels that the humanoid form is actually a pretty decent shape foreign intelligent life form. I agree with him. I don't think it's the only one.
And, I smell bias.
No. I have a Cocker Spaniel. He has four legs. He's brilliant.
I see. PhD in Cocker Spanielism.
All right. How about E.T.? Everyone said he was cuddly. I thought he was ugly as sin.
That's right. And that whole neck thing freaked me the hell out when
extending
I saw
neck.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, any alien has glowing fingers and starts walking towards me with a finger glowing. You know, I'm of a certain age where I've gone to the doctor and they've walked towards me with a finger extended. Out of here. Gone.
Yeah. There's so much more to talk about, but all good things must come to an end. You've been listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. As always, keep looking up.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.